This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs for Wells Tech, the Wells Tech podcast, the only one that I'm aware of that's called the Wells Tech podcast. We run it every Tuesday, and we've been doing it for 361 times. This is episode 361 for September 30th, 2014. And I'm looking forward to a fun time today because not only do I have my regular co-host, the lovely, the talented Sally Draper, but we also have our SRCTC, our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent, otherwise known as Gail Potratz from New London, Wisconsin. Hi, Gail. Hi, Sally.
Hello. Hi, everybody.
Good to have you back, Gail. It's been a while.
It has.
We're off, and To be perfectly honest, these are one of the shows. I look forward to all the shows, but especially this one because Sally and Gail can do all the talking. I just have to sit back and soak in all the knowledge that comes from y'all. So
I look forward to it, too. It's always nice to give Gail and Jason, who joins us as well on a regular basis, a summer break, but it's exciting to welcome them back to a new season of school and school education-focused podcasting. So just eager to get into the conversation and learn about what's going on in Gail's world in terms of educational technology.
Yeah, a lot I'm sure has happened, especially with the advent of a new school year, Gail. So we're going to divide this up into kind of some contrived categories, but I think they'll be good to kind of compartmentalize our discussion. What's in, what's out, what's exciting, what's scary, and what's in the future? So
okay.
Should we start with what's in educational technology?
Sure. Let's start with what's in and talk about the new hardware for the year, I guess. That's always a good place to start since everybody is looking to get new things. We did not add to our fleet of Chromebooks this year. We didn't have to because we were forced to buy a classroom full of laptops, PC laptops, which is a very big number for our school because they are of the PC brand. So we were forced to do that because we have a new software program that will only run on those, which is Project Lead the Way, which is a science-orientated program, which is not does not run through the internet. It's not internet-based yet. It probably will be next year, but we needed to start it this year. So we have some new PCs and we moved some Chromebooks down. So we didn't have to buy any new ones, which was kind of nice. Kids were excited to get their new PCs. It's the 8th graders who have them. When I teach the 7th and the 8th grade together, there's quite an obvious comment that's made by the kids as they start them up because this is where the 8th graders wish they had their Chromebooks back.
Because it's slow, I bet.
It's slow, very slow.
Yeah.
Compared to, you know, they've used a Chromebook for 2 years and now they're using a laptop, so it's kind of...
Start them early, yeah.
Kind of different.
So this is all for STEM kind of stuff?
Right. Project Lead the Way is a national initiative, and it costs $750 for the software. We're just running it in the 7th and 8th grade. They have a program for lower grades, middle grades, which is what we have, and then for high school too. So cost $750 for the software, which you do download from the internet onto each machine, and
not
then you also
license, but total.
Total.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Total. And then also though the other fee is we paid $1,250 to send one of our teachers to MSOE for a week of training. So there is some cost involved, but they're having a good time doing it. They're building bridges and designing things that can shoot chew things across the room and all kinds of things that they like. They're having regular science on some days and then Project Lead the Way on some days as well. So that's how we chose to mix both of them. Some schools use Project Lead the Way exclusively, and some do a quarter of each. We're just doing every week there's some of each is what we're trying. So seems to be going very well.
Okay.
Good. So that was kind of a new mix of software and hardware.
And so, and you said you moved the Chromebooks down, so that means 5th and 6th grade got Chromebooks this year?
5th did not have that before.
Okay,
they had the MacBooks, the old MacBooks. And so the old MacBooks also, you don't throw anything away, so the old MacBooks moved down to 4th grade, and what we did was we just stripped them down to basically nothing and put the Chrome browser on there. They were still new enough that you could run the Chrome browser. So they're basically using those as Chromebooks pretty much too.
That's the beauty of being a Google Apps school, I suppose.
Yeah.
It really doesn't matter which machine you're using, whether you're Chromebook or a Mac or now these new STEM computers. They can all run a Chrome browser and get all the apps, right?
Right. It's really pretty much the same across the board. So that is nice.
So you're basically one-to-one from 4th grade on.
4th grade, I wouldn't say it's one-to-one. They use them, but it's not in a one-to-one situation, only because the 4th grade teacher also has 3rd grade, and she has a huge class. So it's a little bit difficult this year to make that work.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are iPads in your mix anywhere, Sal? Gail?
We just have a couple iPads. The first ones we had, the first generation, are pretty useless now for the stuff. So we've got, I think, 3 or 4 of the newer ones, if you count teachers that bring their own when they need them. But we did get a really neat new thing, piece of hardware to go with our iPads that we plan to use in the lower grades in their little learning stations or learning centers. So I bought 2 of this product called Play Osmo. And what Play Osmo does for you is it allows you, there you go, thank you, Sally. I forget that I can share my screen.
No problem.
Okay. You're watching the little movie right now. It's kind of a reflector piece that goes on the top and a base that the thing stands up in. And then you can, as you see, manipulate things on the table in front of you. Some of the things are set to run collaboratively. Some are kind of competitive in nature. And there's a Tangram game, a word game, and one called Newton. And what you do is you download those apps on your iPad. So there is an iPad component that runs. But the neat part is you can manipulate things on the table in front of the iPad and get people involved that way. The favorite one, this is brand new. I ordered these in the summer when they weren't even produced yet.
So the Kickstarter thing?
Yeah, you could get $20 off. They're $99, so I got them for $79. And the neat one is, they're all neat. My grandson happened to be here this weekend, and he's in 4th grade, and he just had a ball with it. And I knew that if I let him play with it, I would learn how to use it. So we had a lot of fun. Newton is the game the last picture you saw. You can take a piece of paper and put objects on it or put your hand on it or draw on it, and what you do is you try to manipulate things so that the little balls that are dropping down end up hitting the targets.
Right.
So it's kind of like a STEM
game.
You're building
the
bridges.
Rope or something like that. Yep.
Yeah, it is pretty neat. He was far better at it than I was, which I anticipated. So I think the kids will really have a good time with that. They work together on some of those things. And so I'm looking forward to putting it into the lower grade classrooms.
Okay.
Very good. Lower grade. As far as teachers, you have some new online lesson plan book software that you're going to be using.
We do. Would you like me to show you that?
Sure.
I'll see if I can do that here. Let's go out here. And that's not what we want to see. All right. There you go. Can you see?
We see the mind map.
Yeah. Oh, well, it should be coming. I turned that one. I switched.
Let's see if I can switch to it. Maybe I can bring it up and you can tell us about it.
All right.
And PlanBook EDU, right?
Yep.
So you can turn your screen sharing back off.
Well, okay. I have it open to a couple of things that... Okay.
There you go. We see you again now.
Okay. You see my PlanBook EDU?
Nope, we see your camera.
Oh, all right.
But that's okay. I have PlanBook EDU up, so you could maybe just tell us about it.
Okay. Well, what PlanBook EDU is, I kind of wanted to show you what how it looks. You know, I'm not a homeroom teacher, so I teach four different classes. So I can get into the plan books of these four different classes and post my language arts lesson plans. And the history teacher can go in and post his lesson plans. So it's a collaborative benefit that you have. The free version is, there is a free version. You can't do this collaboration or embedding on the website if you use the free version. It's just basically a plan book. But if you pay $12 a teacher, you get this collaborative where you can see everybody else's, you know, the whole fifth grade or the whole eighth grade with all the teachers involved putting their lesson plans onto this one, into this one plan book, which is really kind of handy because I can look and see when I'm giving a big test, if they're also having a social studies or science test plan, you know, all that plan that day, I might adjust my schedule. It's pretty handy, and then
it's like it's especially good for departmentalized situations. Yeah,
exactly. And then you can also link this. All of our websites, classroom websites, have the appropriate grade linked on there, so parents at home at night, because you know how you get questions about, I didn't know what the assignment was, I couldn't help them, I didn't know what they were supposed to do. You can make these lesson plans as specific as you want to, so that people really know what's going on. We have kind of a unified approach in 5 through 8 that we kind of all make ours the same, so they know what to look for, so that they can help kids at home if they are looking for their help or whatever.
So this isn't a learning management system. This is
no, not at all.
There is access by parents or students?
Yes.
No, there is.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
well, because kind of we just
link. They can see the same thing we do.
Okay.
Right.
Gotcha. Okay. We should probably move on to what's out. And that's a short list, right, Gail?
Yeah, I think I already mentioned the only thing that's, well, I mentioned we repurposed the math books.
Yep.
Yes, the only thing that's really out is we debated about using Google Classroom, which is really new to be out, but we decided not to use that this year, to go without it, because I guess I decided basically because a lot of the things I like to use in language arts to do voice comments, Kazina for one, I know I talked about that on the show before, those things don't work in. You can't use them for evaluating writing.
Right, yeah.
And you can't bring in, I don't know, like, we're all satisfied. It's only 5 through 8 that really uses distribution of things to students and collection through Google at this point. And mm-hmm. all of us are very satisfied with the way we distribute and collect things. I'm a big Doctopus Rubric user, and some people have figured out that, okay, if you have a shared folder and you don't want kids to see each other's stuff in the shared folder, all you do is teach the kids before they put their work in the shared folder, because everything in the shared folder is shared to everybody automatically. They can actually, because they own the document, they can open up the sharing on their own document and they can take off everybody but themselves and the teacher.
Right.
So we have it by classes, so they just cross out grade 8 at Emmanuel, and they just put their name in there, so they can change it. And so that works, too. We kind of put the onus on the kids to do some of the sharing on that end, too.
Right.
So we've got ways that work for us, so
So although no Google Classroom right now. And I think that's a good point. And we got a voicemail from Jason Schmidt that kind of talked to that point where they have a specific use case for it. So why don't we play that and hear what Jason, our other semi-regular classroom technology correspondent, has to say about their use of Google Classrooms. Hang on just a minute.
Hey, Martin and Sally. This is Jason Schmidt from Bennington, Nebraska. I heard you guys were talking about Classroom on this upcoming show, and I just wanted to point out a couple of things that we have going on in our district and the way that it works in over here. What we have been doing, and one of the things that that our district has kind of adopted as a workflow, is we use Classroom, Google Classroom, for kind of a works in progress kind of a page. So anytime kids are working on something, they need feedback or anything like that, then that's the platform that teachers use to interact with the kids. And then once they've gone through that editing process and they're ready to submit things for a grade, we actually have something in our Moodle installation where the students can submit final work through Moodle from their Google Docs into Moodle. So that's how we kind of work Classroom into our workflow. It's not so much a learning management system, but it's a more of a document management system, and helping with that paperless workflow. And particularly, you know, we have teachers that kind of struggle with things like Doctopus and G-Class folders and things like that. So Classroom has been a really great thing for our teachers and for my district. So just wanted to drop a note and let you guys know kind of a little bit about our experience with that. Have a wonderful, fantastic day, and thanks for sharing. You guys are awesome.
We're awesome.
We're awesome too, Jason. We look forward to next month when we can have you on the show. He talked a little bit about a specific use case for their use of Classroom, and I'm sure it's all over the board, and it's a pretty immature product from what I can tell at this point, and we'll talk more about it when we get Jason on, but he seemed to use it in a kind of a narrow sense for kind of work in progress stuff versus a full-blown learning management system.
Just a quick mention that we do have some Google Classroom resources. So everybody's kind of notching up and learning the system, and there's a couple of things that we'll share in the show notes, including one that's a presentation, a Google slideshow, which I really liked because it shows things from both the teacher perspective and the student perspective. So there are slides in the presentation where they use a little teacher icon. So this is what the teacher would see because it has the teacher icon. And then there's slides in the presentation where they use the student icon. This is the student's view. And so I think if you are considering it, this is a good presentation to kind of tuck away and perhaps make use of.
One caveat as you talk about that, if you're a teacher, don't use your credentials to enter you as a student to see how it works for a student, because you'll be stuck. If your credentials in there and you want to go in then as a teacher.
You'll be stuck in student world.
Yeah, I've heard of teachers that cannot create the account they need, and it's quite a rigmarole to change it. So,
all right. Yeah. Good tip. All right, let's go on to what's exciting. What is exciting, Gail, for you?
What's exciting? Let me check my notes. Play Osmo's pretty exciting. Oh,
Google
okay.
Google Apps buy-in.
All right. Yeah, the Google Apps buy-in, that's exciting.
How about that?
Well, it is a big thing because here we've been split when we, 3 years ago, or however, whenever, when we first introduced the official Google Apps, we'd been playing around with personal Gmail stuff and collaborating on the education side of the building, but when we went to Google, the office staff and pastors and that side of the building chose not to really go full-fledged into it. Probably pretty much hardly anything into it. So it's become actually quite difficult because our school secretary is still working in that world while we're in the Google world. So it's very exciting that this summer I did a little bit of training with them to try to get them to see the possibilities that opened up for us if they would, you know, join us. And the office staff saw that and saw some real need for the collaboration. So slowly but surely, we need more training, but we're becoming unified in the Google world, which is a really big thing. So I'm excited about that.
That's one of the knocks I've heard about going completely Google Apps is that office staff side, the church and school office side, you know, not being able to maybe jump away from, you know, some of the traditional office products. But it sounds like you're making some headway there.
Well, you got to do it gradually. They don't even know. They're really using their Gmail, but they're using it through Mozilla's Thunderbird, which looks an awful lot like Microsoft Office. So I tried to at least get them to that point, and now some of them are actually using the real Gmail. So, yep, it's coming.
I think that's something that's coming in a lot of different places, that move to the cloud, basically. And we're having these same discussions here at MLC, and, you know, where do we house things? Do we encourage the professors to put things in the cloud and things like that? So I think that's... we're just kind of straddling a fence right now, and I think the cloud's where everything's going, so it's just going to take some time and patience to get there, but encouraging to see the changes.
Yep. So what's scary, Gail? What's challenging, scary?
Well, for a person who has always been big on standardization of equipment and software, that certainly isn't happening anymore.
Yeah, you just mentioned like three or four different platforms.
Right, exactly. But the saving grace is, as you mentioned, if you're using the Google browser and you're using Google Apps, that really brings everything together. It becomes much less of a hassle, and the Google management being much easier than managing a whole bunch of regular desktops or whatever in the old days. It's a trade-off, and though it might be scary, I've been pleasantly surprised how easy it is to manage multiple things on the network and in the building.
Okay.
That's encouraging.
Yeah.
And then speaking of what's scary, what's challenging, you have in your what's in the future category maybe another device or platform.
Yes. For being an Apple school for 20 years that I was here, and everything Apple, we certainly have changed. We do have those few iPads, which I really love. I have an iPad that I love, but again, the management of those things is just not where it needs to be. Apple's trying, but it's still not there. And the fact that the Nexus 7 tablet can be managed through the same management console as the Chromebooks can, right in the same console, and make the same, you know, settings and everything so easily. We are thinking if we do get some tablets next year, they will be probably the Nexus 7 variety rather than iPads. So that'll be a big change for us.
Awesome. Sounds exciting.
Cool. Yeah.
Thanks for sharing, Gail. Good to catch up with your, what's going on at a school. I would think a lot of, I think you're probably ahead of the curve from a lot of schools, but I think each one of these topics that we talked about are going to be on deck for school technology directors as they're thinking about where to go. I mean, they're all thinking one-to-one at this point somehow, but there are many paths to get there. So.
And here's something else that's really exciting that I could mention. I didn't think of this, but right now I'm in the midst of teaching the MLC course that I teach about technology coordination to there's five undergrads and nine teachers that are taking the course. It's kind of two courses run together is what it is. But I am really excited to see the undergrad students that are at MLC now and that they're interested in really getting into technology. I think we'll be producing some people that we have these people that get out and they say, okay, you're the technology director, and you have no background. We're actually getting some people now with some background and that are very excited about it. I see some real positive change, coming to us from MLC. I think that's really exciting.
I'll just chime in there and say it. Very excited with the work that Jim Grunwald and James Karlofsky, who's new on campus, came to us from Cal Moraine this year. Both of them are looking at Chromebooks in the students' hands in the near future, so that they'll be teaching and requiring the students to live in that Chromebook world at least for a period of time. So
that's
yeah.
great.
Interesting on the college level, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on. We better get a move on. News and tech. Apple has been the news. They didn't have a very good week last week. The week before was great because they launched their shiny new iPhone 6s and 6 Pluses, and everybody was excited about that. But some controversy last week. There was something called Bendgate.
Very popular hashtag, that's yeah. right. Interesting, Martin. You and I did this pre-show prep last week and talked about Bendgate being all over the news. I went out today to find some appropriate articles to link to, and all the articles say it was a non-event. Apparently there was a lot of hubbub over nothing, because even Consumer Report tested the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus and found them not to be that dramatically more bendy than anything else. If you bend something that's metal, it's probably going to have some bend to it if you really try hard, but they don't have any different response than other things, apparently. I also found one article where some teenagers went into the Apple store just yesterday, a store in England, and purposefully bent to breakage some devices, so basically vandalism, and filmed it all and put it out on YouTube. Isn't it sad, the world? And they felt very justified in doing this. It was just really sad. So.
But that wasn't the end of the bad news, and I suppose that's not all bad news because Consumer Reports helped them out a little bit,
mm-hmm.
but we had a bad update go out, 8.0.1, kind of almost bricked phones where you couldn't make phone calls, you couldn't update things, so they quickly had to pull that and reissue one. One just came out, I think, yesterday or the day before, 8.0.2. And resolved, you know, the issues there. So I think they'll look for quiet waters here, hope for quiet waters here for the next couple months and sell a gazillion iPhones.
Right as
going to be released in China here shortly, and that's just a huge market. And,
a little more news, not from Apple, but from Google. Some good news today for Google Apps for Education schools. Google announced Drive for Education. So not that long ago, they upped the ante with Drive for Work, a premium version for business settings, and now they've applied that for free to Google Apps for Education. And so the biggie, unlimited storage. No more worrying about how much space you have left or which user needs more gigabytes, it says. And individual file uploads can be up to 5 terabytes in size.
Wow, that's nice.
That's
yeah.
a good PowerPoint.
For sure. They said an infinitely large, ultra secure, and entirely free book bag for the 21st century. That's what Drive for Education is.
You're kind of locked in.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Now, before that, anything in a Google Doc or a spreadsheet or a Google slide did not count against your cap.
No, correct. It
was just the other stuff. So they said, well, we'll let you do whatever you want.
Go
okay, cool. Another reason to maybe give it a try.
And just one more mention there. They also say Google Vault will be available, which is their solution for search and discovery for compliance needs.
E-discovery, right.
So, yeah, I think that's a pretty big win in terms of managing email accounts and things like that. So.
Sure. All right, let's move on to our ministry resource. And I want to point everybody to our ShopWells site, shopwells.net, and look at the special that's there. The product of the month is a Toshiba Chromebook, and it is from one of our newest vendors. We haven't really announced this yet, but they're kind of on the site spooking around a little bit with specials like this. Troxel is the name of the vendor, and we picked them because they basically offer almost every kind and shape of Chromebook that you can get and are giving us some very appealing pricing. So if you are maybe thinking about a one-to-one initiative or adding some Chromebooks or maybe for the second term or second semester rolling these out, make sure you take a look at shopwells.net and the product of the month section there for these Toshiba Chromebooks, and I believe they are
265
for a Chromebook.
Does that count the license?
I think it in, I don't know.
I'm not seeing it listed. Yeah, I don't know.
How much is the license? The license is like $5, $10? What is it?
$30.
Yeah. Right. So may make a difference. I doubt it at that price. Maybe it does.
Yeah.
I know they were giving us a good deal. So if you're interested in Chromebooks, that's a good place to shop. Let's move on to our tips and picks of the week. Gail, can you hit the one for us?
I'm going to try again to share my screen here. And
you can do it.
Show you.
We got
it. Nice.
Okay, can you see it?
Mm-hmm. PictoChart.
All right. PictoChart is my pick of the week. It is for making infographics. And it's free. It has some limitations in the free version, of course. But it is pretty cool. When you go in a little further, you see that you can make infographics. You can also make reports and banners and actual presentations that look like infographics. But these are all for the paid version. And I don't even remember what the paid version cost. I'm sorry. I think I did look, but I knew I wasn't going to buy it, so it didn't. Because we can do a lot with the free. You get some templates, featured templates down below here, and you get some free icons and decorative things and whatever. But what I'm mostly interested in is create your own graphic, which is right here, your own infographic. So I just quickly did one to show you how easy it is to do it and how I'm looking forward to having the kids do this. So here is just a little picture of the one I created about historical fiction as a literary genre, and actually had one of the kids throw some things in there and put it together quickly so you could just see what kind of stuff you can do. I envision that if you were a social studies teacher, you're basically making a poster, you know, that's what we would have called it years ago, but now it's an infographic, and a lot of pictures, a lot of words, and I'm thinking lists of things. A lot of times you have lists of most active volcanoes or whatever, geography, history, science. I just can see a lot of, and there were some templates that would be very inviting, I think, for that too, for that type of work. Let's see down here, stress and health, the earth. I mean, they've got some templates that really fit, I think, with that kind of thing, with some nice arrangements here. So
I think you might win Cool Teacher of the Year if you let them do their book reports and stuff
like
that.
Oh, yeah.
Very fun.
It would be a great thing for we always do cool book reports. And, yeah, this is what I'm going to do with it. I'm thinking of even making a set of literary genre. You know, we've learned that so far this year. So making a set of these that talk about each one of the genre. And if, you know, so, I mean, the list is endless, what you could do. You could do current events. There's a newspaper thing here, or take an era of history and make the newspaper kind of deal that they have here on the end down here. There is just limitless possibilities.
Gail, I think this is just screaming for you to create a class Pinterest board and infographics on Pinterest, don't you think?
I notice you've been posting things to my ancient board that I never look at. Yeah. No, I just don't know if that's going to convince me.
Oh, shucks.
It is very appropriately Pinterest. You are right.
All right.
Pinterestable, yes.
Yes. All right. Okay, so that is my
chart. PIKTO chart is how you might find that. So.
Right.
Very good. Thanks, Gail. Yeah. Sally, pick or tip?
My turn. I read some more interesting news from Google that I wanted to share, this time in relation to the Google Forms. And I guess I hadn't created a form in a couple of weeks because they have upped the ante on Google Forms, and I was super excited. First of all, there's a blog post about design changes. And so you can click on this change theme, and you have a whole bunch of new themes that you can pick from, a really long list. It used to be a really short list. Mm-hmm. And then you can also click the customize and get to all these different things that you can do. You can change, you know, font types. You can change background colors. You can change header images, and they have lots to pick from. Or you can upload your own header images. Just lots more flexibility in terms of design, which makes me really excited for Google Forms. But as if that wasn't enough, yesterday they announced some other changes where you can shuffle your questions. You can allow only one response per user, and then do some more limitations, like how many responses they can check and things like that. So really exciting innovations for the Google form. So check it out if you haven't lately. And I tell you this, it's good news. I'm excited. It's also bad news if you're planning to present at teacher conference next week on Google Forms, because all of my content has now changed. So thank you, Google.
Yeah. So Gail and Sally, I'm assuming that Google Forms are really an important piece in the educational space. If you're, I don't know if do you assessments with Google Forms? Do you make a lot of use of those, or is that still kind of more just for, you know, fill out this form to go to the field trip kind of stuff?
I really don't use them in quizzes kind of things. I don't use much of that kind of assessment in language arts.
Right.
Maybe it's the subject that I teach in. I don't know, but I don't really use them that way. I use them a lot. I do use them. They always sign up for their quarterly book review that they sign up online.
Sure.
So I always have a sign up form online. I use them more for management in school than I do for assessment.
Okay. All right. My pick of the week is something that I referenced a couple weeks back, not as a pick, but just for news and tech, and that is a new phone, which I have in my hot little hands, and that is the new Moto X. This is, they call it the Moto X 2014 version. I'm a big fan of the original Moto X. I have three different phones for mobile app testing, but I really can only use one at a time, of course. And that Moto X was the one that I would constantly come back to. So when I had a chance to upgrade, that's what I did. The neat part about Moto X is they have something called Moto Maker, which allows you to totally customize your phone. So you can customize, especially the back. And they have synthetics, they have woods, like bamboo and walnut, and they have now leather, which is what I got. So I have a leather back on my phone, and then you can pick the accent color. Maybe you can't see it on screen here, but it's a green accent, which appears here around the logo, and then the speaker grill in the front and the earpiece at the top. You do have a lot of options with creating it. They've priced it really nicely too. So on contract, if your contract's up, $99. So it's much cheaper than, let's say, an iPhone would be, which is $199 or $299, depending on which one you get. And even off contract, if you don't like to be on contracts and want to pay full price, it's cheaper as well. I believe it's $399 for off contract price. You don't get locked into a contract. They've made it a little bit bigger. It's a 5.2-inch screen, but what's really nice about it is it doesn't feel that big. I can use it, I don't have real big hands, so I can still grip it and manipulate the screen. They've upgraded the screen resolution. The old Moto X used to be 720p. This is 1080p. The sound is better. The camera is better. That was one of the knocks. Battery is still okay. They could have done a little bit better job there. I can get through the day, but that's about it. It's got this curved back, which makes it feel kind of nice in the hand. Just some nice features, like the Android product, especially this one, because it allows you to talk to it without actually having to turn it on. So if you want to make it do something, even if it's in an off state like this, you can say, OK, Moto X, and it turns on, and then it begins to listen for whatever you're asking it. And that was just gibberish, I'm sure, at this point. So I could have it play a podcast, the WellsTech podcast, if I want, or get directions, or ask it the weather, or sports scores, or anything like that. Just a really good, solid device, worth a look if you're interested in an Android phone. It's really, I think, the best Android phone on the market right now. So
that's so really pick. I'm really curious about that customization process. I have a little bit of experience with that on the Apple side because you can have your phone or iPad engraved if you order it off the site. So I ordered my iPad that way, and I just recently ordered one for my mom that way, and both of them came from China. We got the FedEx thing from, or yeah, whatever, UPS, from China because of the engraving. It actually shipped from China. So what about this? Did you get it from China, Martin? Did you have to wait a long time? Or
It was a week and a half after I ordered, but that's, I think, because of, I mean, I ordered the first day it was available, so I don't know what the average turnaround time is. It's probably under a week, so it doesn't take that long. The big deal with Moto X, the original, was that it was made in the U.S., made in Texas. But now, since Motorola has been purchased by Lenovo, which is a China-based company, I'm pretty sure they're all made in China at this point. So, but yeah, you can get these engraved too. I didn't, but you can get them engraved with, you know, whatever, you know, name or whatever, even on the leather or the wood. But it's cool. Just take a look at Moto Maker, and you kind of see all the options there. So. Cool product.
I'd never be able to decide. You did good. Narrow it down.
You can save your designs and get people to vote on them and such.
Oh, my goodness. Pandora's box.
That's the direction we're headed, just more choice. And
yeah,
really, when you think about it, your phone is now a very personal thing. It's something that for many people you carry everywhere, and it's your go-to thing. And if you're without it, if you forget it, that's like what it used to be when you forgot to put your watch on. It's like, I feel lost. I don't know if you guys remember that, but wore a watch for many years, and that's the way I felt. I think that's the way phones are today.
So you don't wear a watch?
Nope.
Because you carry a phone with the time on it.
Yep. And one other neat thing about this is it can be in this state of off, and I can just wave my hand in front, and tells me the time.
That's pretty nice when you don't wear a watch.
Yep.
Do you wear a watch? Do you wear a watch?
I don't.
I pull it out of my pocket.
Oh, word. I use paper. I wear a watch. I'm so behind. Why am I on a tech podcast?
Valley old school, Draper.
Hey, yes.
We need more balance. That's why.
It even has little hands on it and everything. It's really
a lot of kids don't know what to do with those, or wouldn't be able to tell
word.
Them.
Gee.
Let's move on to our Wells Insider section, Sally.
Because you want to know, folks, this is something exciting on our Wells.net website. It's a page where you can get free desktop wallpapers, and they change every month because they have a calendar embedded. Let's see if I can show you one. They just updated them for October, so if you're looking for something lovely to feature a Bible verse and a calendar for October, you can find those here. Also on this page, we have a lot of images that are appropriate for digital display, which is more and more popular. Many churches are going to digital displays to have announcements and things display as people are moving in the narthex or whatever. And Wells has provided you digital display images that focus on missions or the Wells mobile app or Forward in Christ magazine or whatever it may be. You can come here and download them in PowerPoint and JPEG format. And I'm sure they're regularly updating with new things as well. So just a nice page to kind of bookmark and come back and visit for free desktop wallpapers and digital display images.
Is there a nifty URL for that, Sally? I don't remember.
Wells.net/streams-media/images. That's pretty nifty, isn't it?
If you just if you just search for Wells Tech wallpaper, I think you get right to the page with the calendars.
Cool.
Because I always do that. You know, the kids, I use the calendars, and the kids will even, they get, so they ask, you know, oh, it's the end of the month. Oh, where's the calendar? What's the new calendar like? And so they look forward to that because they see them up on the screen all the time before I start my spiel, you know. So they're pretty cool.
I've got to share a comment from Fred Kogler, who's apparently watching. He's referring back to our previous watch conversation. He said, I have to tell you that one of my elders put an alarm clock in the pulpit. No watch to watch. I wonder if there's an alarm set at like 15 minutes too.
Electric charge.
Time to go. Time to move along, Pastor. Packers game is on this afternoon.
I guess.
All right. Thank you, Fred. Need to know, we want to remind everybody that we're still looking for iPhone 4s to send to the national pastors in our Malawi mission field. Needs to be an AT&T mobile or unlocked GSM phone of some sort. Paul Nitz is our missionary in the field out there, and he's let us know that these would be great devices to have in the hands of the national pastors, just for general communications. Computer ownership and just sending email is not a great option there, but having these phones and the apps that are on them and then text messaging is huge, plus they're portable and would be a very valuable ministry tool. So if you have an iPhone 4, please send it to our office, and that link is on our show notes page where to do that. Send your charger and, you know, all that good stuff too, and we'll get them out to Africa.
All right, time for some community feedback, and we have a good amount to share this week, starting with our friend, Pastor Fred Kogler, who just made a comment on the show. He wrote to us this week, actually called me last week, and I forgot to include it in last week's community feedback, so apologies for that. But Pastor Kogler's doing something really awesome. He's recording on a regular basis a devotion, and it's a very relaxed thing. It's the pastor in his study where he records a video devotion for sharing, and he's posting them on Vimeo, and then also promoting them on YouTube and on Facebook, his personal Facebook page. So if you're Facebook friends with them, you'll see it there as well. But what Pastor Kogler would like to do is kind of take it to the next level and get some more exposure for it. So if I'm understanding at least one angle of his questioning, it is, how do you improve your searchability on YouTube? You know, I think, Martin, we've probably talked about search engine optimization for Google and things like that, but I'm really stumped. I never considered getting better exposure on YouTube, besides the fact that the more people that watch it, your number of views goes up. Right. Do you have other tips for sharing, getting more exposure on YouTube?
I would say make sure you tag things appropriately, and make sure you always write a description. Maybe putting it in playlists, your own playlists would be helpful, and making sure it gets in other people's playlists. So yeah, I can't think of other things beyond that other than just putting out some great content, and frequency is probably a good thing as well. Just keep it on a regular basis, keep plugging away, and link to it wherever you can. That's always a driver for Google results, is how many sites are linking to it. So just make sure that it's everywhere.
I think two people that really use YouTube are channel-based. So you, of course, would want to be creating a channel so that people could subscribe to your channel.
Right.
I think that's...
Yep. And they are well done, and we appreciate being aware of that, Fred.
We also had an email from Jim Bauer, who's a regular Wells Tech contributor. He's up at Christ Lutheran Church in Baxter, Minnesota. And I think I had mentioned before on the show that Jim shared a vision of having a touchscreen kiosk in like the church narthex, where people could get the most up-to-date information, not just for the congregation, but bringing in things like RSS feeds from organizations like LWMS or Kingdom Workers, where they're looking for volunteers or have volunteer opportunities. And Jim's been working on this and sent an email this week just to give us an update. I got a little sneak preview of his site. I'm really excited to be able to share it at some point in the future, where he's using WordPress a blogging site, to be the platform for this touchscreen device that he's developed for their congregation. So definitely moving forward, and plans are taking shape, but I think it's taking a lot of trial and error. Jim's invested a lot of time into it, not just the WordPress site, but the hardware and all of that, to kind of see this vision come to life. And it's exciting to have a seat and ride along with him, and we're looking forward to being able to share more about this in the future. So thanks for the update, Jim.
Great.
A couple of links that I wanted to share quickly. And let's see if I can share my screen to do that and get to the right thing. First of all, CK through 12, which is an organization that generated, Creative Commons textbooks, online textbooks, for K through 12. They've come up with a new area of their website. It's in beta currently, and it's called their Exploration Series. But basically, it's animations, especially physics-based animations. So things like bow and arrow, tire pressure, Everglades airboats, cliff diving. You can go here and work through animations. So I would think this would be real appropriate for a science classroom. Maybe you don't have the Project Lead the Way software yet, but you can do some hands-on kind of things in this animated exploration series from CK through 12. So save that link. A few links that came in from Nancy Marks. One is called Church Community Builders, a web-based church management software, and another is called Icon System, which is another church management software. So if you're shopping for those kind of things, perhaps you want to add these to your list of potential options for church management software. And then Nancy also tagged Print My Cal, which is a product that helps you print your Google Calendar in a format that you can edit in Microsoft Word or other word processing software. So check it out at printmycal.wordpress.com.
I didn't know he had a video up there. That's cool.
Yeah. So, I think that's going to do it for community feedback for this week, Martin.
You've got tabs left there, Sally.
Yeah, those are features for the future.
Okay. next week, in our 362nd episode, we're doing kind of a two-parter. And a while back, we announced a tech survey, a pastor's tech survey. And we're going to be focusing next week on pastor's office technology, or pastor's office tech, and revealing some of the results of that survey. And we will take survey submissions until, what did we say, Saturday night, Sally?
Saturday night, October 4th. So get your responses in. And there's a reason that you'd want to do this, because
they want to help us out with the show.
That's right.
But
and
they may win, one lucky winner will win, a copy of HymnSoft. And it is the Player 3.0 version. This was just recently released. We are very thankful to Northwestern Publishing House for donating this for the winner. And in the part two of this, we're going to have Carl Nolte come on and talk a little bit about the software and some of the things MPH is doing in this space. So
maybe we'll let him choose who the winner is from our list of submissions. It'll be fun.
Okay, so that's next week. We have a featured video or videos, Sally, for starting out the show.
One video, but two playlists that it actually landed on.
Okay.
An instructional and a product demo video, and it's related to Google Classroom. We talked about Google Classroom earlier, and many people, as I said earlier, are notching up and kind of trying to get their head around it might help them in their schools. And this is from Fried Technology, an ed tech blogger who's put together a 11-minute overview of Google Classroom. So if you want to get the lowdown on Google Classroom and try to see some of the features and whether it might be right for you, this might be a good video to watch.
Awesome. If you want to follow along with the things that we've talked about on the show, wellstech.wells.net is the place to go. That's our show notes page. And that also will enable you to leave a comment, which we might share on the show. And other connecting with us are right there across the top. Of course, you can always email us, wellstech@wells.net. But there's Google+, Facebook, Twitter, Digo, Pinterest. There's the Wells Tech listserv. There's also ways for you to listen and view the show there from Stitcher to iTunes and just good old RSS. So please join the conversation. Gail, thank you very much for joining us. It was fun.
You're very welcome. I enjoyed it.
And Sally, nice job as usual. We will reconnect next week and hope all of you can join us again. Bye-bye.